Talking Men with Matt Webb on Cambridge 105.
So it is a fraction after 2:30, and I'm pleased to welcome into the studio trained counsellor Nigel Beaumont, who's going to be discussing more therapies available for men recovering from mental health problems. And this week we're going to be focusing on person-centred therapy. Good afternoon to you, Nigel.
Yeah, hi, Matt.
Just before we go into this discussion, it's an interesting report that's actually come out today by CALM. That's the Campaign Against Living Miserably. And they say new dads are just as likely to struggle as new mums. Now, a poll finds 3% of new mothers and new fathers consider suicide, even momentarily, in the first year of parenthood. And £290 million is invested in the well-being of new and expectant mothers. And the charity says new expectant dads need attention too. Do you agree with them?
Yes, I do. I think the increasing role of dads in childcare is needs to be acknowledged, I guess, in every respect, including health, mental health care, because I think we did highlight in one of the earlier programs, it is a statistic that has been increasingly recognized. And why shouldn't men have the same sort of reaction to the change in their life, the major change in their life, which is having a child, a new child, can bring? So it's quite natural. It's not surprising. But what is surprising is there's less funds dedicated perhaps to helping and supporting new dads, you know, in that role.
Do you get many new dads come and see you about this topic?
No, I haven't had any. But I guess, you know, that's not surprising. I mean, I think increasingly, though, it is something that will happen. But in terms of the practice that I do, I've not actually had anyone with that sort of background. But again, it's anxiety related, and you know, anxiety is created by so many things, and this could be one of the contributing factors. So if you've got to look at a person's life in the round, and you can look at where the anxiety is coming from, and it could be one of those factors.
Okay, so person-centered therapy. Tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, so this is a perhaps a less well-publicised therapy, although it has been around for some time. It was created by Carl Rogers, and it's sometimes known as Rogerian therapy. It's also sometimes known as client-centred therapy, but most commonly person-centred therapy, or PCT. And it's slightly different in its approach to many of the major therapies, and it really rests on Carl Rogers' stance that the client is his best expert about his life. And that makes a lot of sense to me, and I'm sure to everyone else. And it is based very firmly on the belief that all living creatures have this self-actualizing tendency. And essentially what that is the need to grow, develop, and realize their own full potential. So it's really just using that as a basis for the therapy. So the therapist takes the stance of not intervening to try and change an individual's behavior. And that is so often fundamental to therapies, you know, that they will try to pick apart a certain behavior and then put in place or help the client put in place an alternative. In this case, it's for the client to recognize their faulty thinking and to be comfortable with picking it apart themselves. So essentially what the therapist is doing is providing an easier environment for them to do that. They are fully engaged with the client, and they will help them and support them in that process. So really, the input from the therapist is to be in tune with the client, which entails having empathy and the ability to be entirely selfless with regard to the client. And contrary to modern-day expectation, often thought that personal distress can be located by a medical diagnosis. You know, for example, chemical imbalance, genetic fault, something along those lines. The concept of person-centered therapy is the idea that such distress is caused rather by unfavorable physical or psychological conditions. And thus they can be dealt with within the framework of a psychotherapy session. So the therapy involves a process of change, which Rogers identified as having a number of stages. He said 7, but it's such an arbitrary figure. It could be any number of stages. But essentially, it is a process that the client goes through and the counsellor or therapist will help them go through. And the stages occur when the right therapeutic conditions exist, i.e. being in a warm and accepting environment. So at the starting point, often someone will not really recognize that their behavioral pattern, they're stuck in a behavioral pattern, and that it can be changed. They don't own the problem. And it's essential that they need to be able to come to terms with that and recognize that it is an idea, not a physical problem, and therefore ideas can be changed. So gradual recognition of the problem to start with, to reduce the fear of looking inside themselves and becoming more freely expressive of what they're feeling. So this is the process that the counselor will help them through. He'll then progress to recognizing what the originally perceived black and white issues were, and the fact that there's some grayness, you know, and it can actually be dealt with. And it's this greater intricacy which will allow the development of a greater understanding of the issues and the problems. So, having initially denied that change was possible, the process will bring about the realization that change is possible and start to look at ways of changing. Alongside these changes, you'll also see bodily changes which result in a change in symptoms. So, a change of behavior, a change in the way a person acts, or the way a person actually is and presents himself. So, as with all therapies, it's important to realize that everyone reacts differently. And so often a case with therapy is there's two steps forward and one step back. And I think that's a feature of therapy that people need to recognize. There's not always a forward process. There are often setbacks. And the counselor is well able to deal with that and to manage it and to encompass that. And the fact that the client takes an active part in this therapy makes it very similar to CBT. You know, although in CBT you are actually providing tasks, so there's a much more of an input of the therapist. So where is this most frequently used? Well, there are a wide range of applications for it, but sadly within the primary care sector, it doesn't fit into the parameters of being easily measured in terms of timing and so on. So it is not recommended, and CBT comes along there. Secondary care, IVF, transplant services, that sort of thing, very frequently used. Also in drug and alcohol rehabilitation, although CBT does sometimes come to the fore there. Where it is particularly useful is in student and schools counselling, couples counselling. Relate used to use it quite extensively. They now tend to use a more integrated model, but it is part and parcel of that.
Why did they change the way in which they did that?
I think it was just really the advancement of thinking, and also the greater range of problems that Relate started to deal with. It used to be quite a sort of a simple marriage breakdown service, if you like, but they now deal with a wide range of issues for individuals as well as couples. And I think being presented with that, they had to adapt their approach to really encompass that. So, in essence, it's really to say that it's the one thing about PCC is that most of the clients favour it. They like it because it really just encompasses them and allows them to work at their own pace. I think also it's important to realise that it is something which can have a fixed duration and you can come back to it. So it's not something that has to be dealt with in regular sessions over a long period of time. So it has that advantage to fit the modern day life. So, you know, in essence, that's it. You can come across it. You could actually request it within the NHS if you wish to. But sadly, they tend to be able to focus more on CBT and prefer that.
I take it depends on the type of person as well. I mean, different therapies are... because everyone's different, different therapies work different in different ways for different people.
I think that's absolutely right, yes. And that's why I think what we've been doing over the last few months is to just try and increase the knowledge and the consciousness of what's available. And in the next program, I'm hoping to just cover, you know, a few of the other therapies that are around as well. You know, and then you can make the choice, or you can actually do some reading about it and just find out a bit more, and then maybe question the doctor or whoever's recommending it. So, yeah, it is very much down to the individual and how well they and their personality are suited to different approaches.
Well, thank you very much for that. And in a month's time, what are we going to be talking about then?
Well, as I just said, there are a number of other approaches which are less mainstream, if you like, although I should take that back because several of them, like mindfulness, is actually very mainstream at the moment. But things like EMDR, which is used quite frequently for PTSD, hypnotherapy is used quite regularly, REBT, which is rational emotive behavioral therapy, very much like CBT. So what I wanted to just sort of summarize and briefly touch on where these different therapies appear, what they entail, just in case someone comes across and thinks, oh, I've heard about that before, and you go and do a little bit more research. So that's what I'll cover next time.
Excellent stuff. Nigel, it's a pleasure having you in the studio. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Matt.
Thank you.
Talking Men with Matt Webb on Cambridge 105.
Welcome back. We'll be hearing from Chris Murphy from the Suffragettes campaign in a couple of moments. But first,
Men's Bits, a roundup of this month's men's issues making the news.
The Testicular Cancer Foundation has launched a new drive encouraging men to check themselves. The Know Your Balls campaign is currently underway in Men's Health Month. Testicular cancer is the most common cancer in males aged between 15 and 34, but when caught early, it's one of the most treatable and survivable types of cancer. William, Kate and Harry have launched a campaign to improve the nation's mental health. The three were at the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park last month to start up Heads Together, which aims to get people talking about any problems they might have. The Duchess of Cambridge says the initiative wants to help everyone feel more confident with their everyday mental health.
Too often, people feel afraid to admit that they are struggling with their mental health. This fear of judgment stops people from getting the help that they need, which can destroy families and end lives.
And finally, the NHS has approved a new laser treatment which could help men with enlarged prostates. It works by delivering a beam of green light to vaporise overgrown tissue. Prostate enlargement is normally due to a condition called benign prostatic hyperplasia, which is a common condition after the age of 50. If you've got a men's story you'd like me to cover, all you need to do is email me, matt@cambridge105.fm.
Talking Men on Cambridge 105.
Now, a campaign to encourage male victims of domestic violence and child custody issues has been launched. The Suffragettes Facebook group hopes to raise awareness of some of the problems men face in society. Chris Murphy is the group's founder and tells us why he decided to launch the campaign.
Suffragettes was set up just over a year ago because I was concerned on a number of issues with regard to family law, divorce law and suicides in men, and the question of domestic abuse with regard to how men are also victims of domestic abuse and tend to be rather silent victims of domestic abuse in that sense. And then at the end of last year, on December 29th, there was a new law came out, an amendment to the Serious Crimes Act, which talks about coercive and controlling behaviour. And then I was rather upset when I read a Home Office minister saying that this was being a, whilst a gender-neutral law, being set up there to protect women and girls. And whilst nobody accepts any abuse for anybody, women, girls, men, boys, transgender, whatever you want to call it, there should be no abuse, and this is what we should be aspirationally looking forward to in society.
Well, one in six victims can be men and one in four victims can be women. Do you think the reason why that there could have been that push towards women is because they make up the majority of the statistics?
I think there's a push towards women because of the fact that a lot of men don't talk out. It is generally accepted, both in America and in the UK, that only about 10% of men come forward to the police to make complaints, I'll use the word complaints loosely, about the fact that they're being mentally, physically or otherwise abused at home, because frequently, as per what I see on our Suffragettes Facebook page, so many are ignored, I won't say laughed at, but certainly not taken seriously and politely told, well, you're a big man, get over it.
You've also touched upon family courts as well.
The family courts, until you get involved in family courts, it's very hard to understand how they operate. You have situations where if there are children involved and there's a divorce going through, then there is the child arrangement facilities, and there is then any financial and or looking after children facilities. And they're two separate issues altogether. Most people don't know it. They don't know that family courts are secret courts. You don't talk about them afterwards. There's nothing comes out into the wide world, so you can actually identify whether, in fact, other people may have suffered in a relationship. And as such, that is denying a man the opportunity, and women, the opportunity to be able to find out whether in fact that they are the single sole victim in a divorce situation where particularly unreasonable behaviour, normally called abuse, is cited as the reason for a divorce application.
Well, quite often you see Fathers for Justice campaigners going to sort of scour buildings and things to try and bring their campaign into the limelight. Do you think that the Fathers for Justice group, for example, has been a beneficial thing to sort of get the issue mentioned in the media and talked about, not necessarily for positive reasons, I mean quite often it's negative, but to sort of encourage people to discuss the topic?
One of the biggest things about Fathers for Justice is the fact that they have raised awareness. And they've raised awareness, maybe not in how we as suffragettes want to raise change in the law, but they certainly raise awareness because people will identify it as I won't say a media stunt. They have very great passionate supporters who've gone on and committed suicide and thrown themselves, I won't say under the horses like the King George's horse. But at the end of the day, they have certainly raised awareness, and then along come people like myself and some other groups such as Families Need Fathers, Mankind Initiative, and what we're trying to address is why it is that men are, on the surface of it, marginalised in the law and its their relationship with the divorce laws.
When you say marginalised, can you expand on that a little?
Marginalised insofar as that if a woman makes a complaint about a man being abusive, he doesn't really have a chance to stand up and be defensive. A man is marginalised because in a divorce situation, 90% of divorce situations, a wife gets the children, and that is brought to bear by the influence of pressure groups who quote attachment theories and the attitudes of women can only look after children, and therefore the man should follow his normal routine, which is you go back to work, we can stay at home and you will look after us. And by the way, we get the family home, and if you get thrown out and are homeless, well, it doesn't really matter, because in a sense, in a lot of cases where people have been writing to us and commenting on our Facebook, they feel totally ignored. Not sympathised with, but ignored by the state and by the justice system, which is influenced greatly by groups who will always believe that women are always victims and men aren't. So, hence, men are marginalised and kept off to one side.
Now, your Facebook group has now got over 4,720 likes, and I've noticed that you've got this pinned post about the general election 2020, where you want to see the availability of marginalised fathers to be, and especially parents, to be able to speak out and be able to talk about the issues.
I think we need to talk about the issues. The issues need to be out in the open rather than constantly hidden behind closed doors and ignored. The question of the 2020 election is very simply this. A lot of fathers are denied contact by their ex-partners with their children, and all sorts of spurious claims come out again with regard to the children don't want to see you. No, I'm sorry, little Johnny is sick, and no, you're not seeing the child, and lots of excuses. You also have the situation whereby the paternal, and it's usually the man who is alienated, the paternal grandparents are alienated from the child or children of the divorce, and they have no rights. A man-in-law in England has no rights to a child, only a woman has. To all intents and purposes, he's a sperm donor and an ATM machine in a lot of divorce cases. Not in all, because I'm not an expert in all of these things, but from what I read and from what I see and from the people who've interacted with me on our Facebook page, they just feel as though they've been used and abused and thrown out into the streets. So yes, the 2020 election, I'm looking for a sense of feeling whereby there is a political party who will pick up this poisoned chalice of saying, let us have true, true, true equality, and not just a bias whereby old-fashioned ideas about what happens as a result of a divorce are at the moment focused absolutely focused towards women and not towards men. Shared parenting should be top of the list for where there's children involved. So let's get grandparents, let's get ex-husbands, let's get the new partners of ex-husbands, let's get the girlfriends, the sisters, and all the rest of them involved in the fact that, look, Mr. Government Potential, let Mr. Political Party, we are focusing upon, we want to have reasonable, normal and shared involvement with those children who have been being denied basically half of, we'll call it, their birthright.
I was very shocked actually by the Home Office statistics, which show that domestic violence in the past 5 years has claimed 190 lives. In particular, 20 of them were men. And it isn't just that. There's also a link to male suicide and also to homelessness too, isn't there?
Well, we're so concerned about homelessness that I had two chaps come and look for a job from me. They were introduced to me in the businesses that I run, and they're homeless, decent enough blokes. And one had come out of a bad relationship, came home in the army and found his wife in bed with the next door neighbour. Nonetheless, the, shall we say, the society sided with the wife, and he ended up by being cast out onto the streets with no support mechanisms, suffering from PTSD. So as a person who can offer jobs, I actually turned around and said, look, I don't know what I'm going to employ you as, but I'll give you a job and you can start next Tuesday. Are you happy enough with that? And he said, fantastic, thank you very much for lifting me off the street, because that's what I do as a person. I think about people, I think about the domestic abuse, I think about the 2,000 plus suicides in men who I believe, and from figures I've calculated, are actually committing suicide as a direct result of feeling, I'll use again this word, marginalised from society, because the courts, in their wisdom, will actually bend towards the woman and her needs, because in a lot of cases there are children. But why can't a man look after children? Why can't a wife go back to work? And a man with his support mechanisms can look after children equally as well. There should be no pressure. There should be total equality upon men being able to look after children.
Chris Murphy from the Suffragettes campaign there. Talking Men will be back in a month's time. And of course, if you've got a story you'd like me to cover next month, all you need to do is email me, matt@cambridge105.fm.
Talking Men with Matt Webb on Cambridge 105.